Welcome to the podcast series from the specialists at Penn Medicine. I'm Melanie Cole, and joining me today is Dr. Scott Kasner. He's the Vice Chair for Clinical Affairs and Neurology, the Ruth M. and Tristram C. Colquitt President's Distinguished Professor of Neurology at Penn Medicine, and he's here to highlight the SELECT-2 thrombectomy study and Penn's role in this study. Dr. Kasner, it's a pleasure to have you join us. Thank you so much. I'd like you to start by walking us through the SELECT-2 study and Penn's role in this study. What drew your interest in participating? And Dr. Kasner, could you briefly tell us a little bit about what the findings mean for stroke patients in our care?
Thanks for having me, and I'm excited to talk about this trial. So thrombectomy has been around for stroke, really established in 2014 in a select group of patients within the first 6 hours after stroke, and that time window expanded to about 24 hours in 2017 after the results of the Diffuse 3 and Dawn trials. Penn participated in the Diffuse 3 trial as well. Those trials all were fairly restrictive in who they could enroll or treat because we excluded patients who had evidence of large territories of damage already. Using a non-contrast CAT scan or a CT perfusion, we could get an assessment of how big the core of the infarct is, which is the part we think is fairly irreversible, and how much is at risk or penumbra, and we think that is reversible. And the prior trials really only included patients with relatively small cores. That allowed us to treat potentially up to about 15% of patients in the U.S. with thrombectomy, but still left a huge number of patients who couldn't get treated because they had too much damage by the time they got to the hospital. Amru Siraj, then at University of Texas in Houston, which is actually where I did my fellowship, pushed forward a trial to look at thrombectomy in the patients with large territories of established damage. He reached out to us and said he was planning on doing this, would we be interested? And I have to admit, I was pretty skeptical. I was pretty well convinced by the prior data that those patients with large cores were going to be devastated no matter what we do and that they were at higher risk for bleeding. But I was certainly willing to be proven wrong. That was only a hypothesis, and it was certainly worth a try. Ultimately, clinical trials give us access to new interventions and an opportunity to improve the field going forward. So we agreed to participate. We were one of 31 sites. We were one of the top enrollers, but one of 31 sites globally. US, Canada, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand were all involved. And the trial took patients who came in with acute large vessel occlusion and randomized them to get thrombectomy or not. The definition of the large core here was either an aspect score, which is a CT score that assigns points for the amount of territory that's damaged, where 10 is a normal scan, and you lose points down to 0 for the amount that's damaged. So an aspect score here of less than 5 was considered a large core. Or they had a CT perfusion, and we had to see a core greater than 50 cc's, which is quite large, on a CT perfusion or MRI. So those are the key criteria. Patients were randomly assigned to thrombectomy or medical therapy. And otherwise, we took care of them according to our standard thrombectomy protocols. The trial went on for about 3 years to enroll all the patients through the pandemic and ultimately enrolled 352 patients, roughly half in each arm. They were pretty typical of a stroke population with an age of about 66, 67 on average. And this was a very severe stroke population with a median NIH stroke scale, a measure of stroke severity of 19. Again, this is a very severe stroke population. The average core size, the area of brain that is damaged, was about 70 to 80 cc's. So again, these were very large strokes. These patients who previously would all have gotten just standard supportive care, half got thrombectomy and half did not, as we said, and the results were amazing. The patients who got thrombectomy were 50% more likely to have a good outcome than those in medical care. We can look at outcomes a few ways. So the 50% is the shift in something called the modified Rankin scale, which is an outcome measure for stroke patients, where 0 means they're completely back to normal with no residual symptoms, 6 is dead, 3 in the middle, it means that somebody can walk, whereas 4 or 5 means that they can't walk. So this pretty well expresses the outcomes in stroke. And again, the patients who got thrombectomy were 50% more likely to have a good outcome. If you kind of split this into dichotomized scores, which sometimes is a little bit easier for people to sort of follow, the proportion of patients who were functionally independent at 90 days or modified Rankin score of 0 to 2 was 3 times higher in the patients who got thrombectomy compared to medical therapy. and independent ambulation was twice as likely. 38% of patients could walk independently at 90 days compared to 18% given medical care. So clearly there's a lot of patients who do still end up disabled, but most importantly, we can save function, substantial function, and independence in a major proportion of these patients, and far more likely than we can with medical care alone. We really didn't change mortality. The proportion of patients who died was quite similar in both groups. That's unfortunately not so surprising in stroke trials, but for many patients with severe stroke, they often consider the likelihood of a severe disability and dependence as a fate worse than death, and so we really have to look at functional scores. We also looked at quality of life and showed that patients who got thrombectomy had better quality of life scores measured across all domains, mobility, cognitive, social interaction, and depression. So those are the major efficacy results. The major safety concern with thrombectomy in these patients with large strokes is that we could cause more damage. We could cause bleeding into this injured tissue. We could cause other complications from the procedure. And in fact, we found that really wasn't the case. Very few patients had a symptomatic intracranial hemorrhage within 24 hours, one in the thrombectomy group and two in the medical care group, so no difference. And again, no real difference in mortality. One sort of surprising result was that there was early neurologic worsening in a greater proportion of patients in the thrombectomy group than the medical group. And we need to explore this a little bit further. Maybe it was some early swelling, maybe it was distal embolization that we broke up the big clot but caused small ones. Again, it didn't really impact the long-term outcome, which is really the thing that we think is of primary importance, but needs a little bit of additional exploration and understanding. Maybe there's ways to improve that in the long run. So those are the key results, and this immediately transformed our clinical care because now we are doing this for everybody who comes in with a large stroke as long as they meet other eligibility criteria, and has opened the door substantially.
Well, thank you for that comprehensive explanation, Dr. Kasner. Such an interesting study. How long has this approach with thrombectomy plus medical care for larger strokes been available at Penn Medicine's Comprehensive Stroke Center? And how important is it that stroke patients and their clinicians be attentive to the clinical studies taking place at Penn Medicine?
This is a huge issue for us. So we started this trial in late 2019. So that means we've been doing this for over 3 years, at least offering it to patients, right? It was a clinical trial, so it's optional. People always have the decision and their families to decide if they want to participate or not, but this has been an option here for 3 years. We presented the results of SELECT-2 at the International Stroke Conference in February of 2023. So the rest of the world, the rest of the US, the rest of every place didn't start treating these patients until February 2023. Think about how many patients had a stroke between late 2019 and 2023 and could have potentially participated in a study like this, had this treatment offered to them, and may have helped move the field faster forward if they had participated in this time window. That could have been huge, and the public health implications of this, as we said, are enormous.
Well, they certainly are. So I'd like you to just expand a bit on what this means for the local market and patients. How do you envision your research translating to patient care? And how could this change the landscape of stroke care? Take us from bench to bedside, Dr. Kasner, and how this care model can really improve and significantly improve the way patients receive their care down the line.
When we think about stroke, I just presented SELECT-2 and said how this is such a great breakthrough for our patients. But broadly speaking, stroke is still a terrible disease. The status quo, the standard treatments are intravenous thrombolytic agents like TPA or TNK within 4.5 hours, thrombectomy up till about 24 hours, and now in a broader population. But we're still left with a lot of people with severe deficits. We need to do better. Among the patients who have severe deficit or even a mild deficit, we have to worry about their risk of another stroke. We have to help their recovery. So there are innumerable problems in the stroke field that we need to address. Here at Penn, we are participating in many trials across this entire spectrum. We have multiple trials for acute therapies, including medications that could be given in addition to thrombolytics or thrombectomy, new catheters and devices to help improve the performance of thrombectomy and maybe do a better job getting these vessels open. We have novel therapies for secondary stroke prevention and novel therapies for recovery. None of these are really available in routine clinical practice. So if you go to a hospital and they do thrombectomy but they don't participate in research, then you're getting the standard of care, but you're also dealing with the fact that the standard of care really fails short of what most people want, which is to walk away from their stroke with no deficit and never have another one. We have to do better. The research gives us that opportunity. If you come to Penn, then all these options are at your fingertips. We assess everybody to see what they might be eligible for. We offer it to them. It's totally voluntary. We're not forcing anybody to do anything, but it's nice to know that you have options. And sometimes we have patients who are offered a trial frequently who say, you know, I'm really excited about this. I want to do something above and beyond what I can do. Sign me up. And we also have people who say, you know, I'm sorry, I don't want to commit my family member to this research project. It sounds a little scary to me. That's understandable too. But I really appreciate knowing that you've done everything that you could and even went to the point of offering me something above and beyond that. And I think people are grateful for the opportunity, are super excited when they hear that not only were they able to get this opportunity, but they got the new thing. And the new thing turns out to be the way we now treat everybody. How amazing is that? And the more of these trials that we do, the faster we solve these problems for the future.
Dr. Kasner, before we wrap up, I'd love for you to tell us about a patient who saw a positive outcome from this expansion. How are they doing now? Just kind of wrap it up for us with a great summary and a little bit of a patient story.
So one of our patients, I remember quite well, a 63-year-old woman, generally pretty healthy, but smoked, who presented with a very severe stroke to another hospital. When she got there, she was not really protecting her airway. They had to intubate her. They transferred her over to us. Her NIH stroke score was 28, so almost off the charts, as high as you can go. She was not able to consent on her own behalf to the trial, but we contacted her family, who understood that, again, the alternative was a very dire situation, so they agreed to have her participate, and she was randomized to thrombectomy before it was available in routine practice. She had quite a rocky course in that she actually had some other complications in the hospital, not related to the procedure itself, but due to some other medical problems. But in the end, we got this blood vessel open, and despite a relatively large stroke early on meeting the criteria for this trial, she ended up being able to resume all of her normal activities. She still had some deficits. Again, that's what we expect in these people who already have extensive damages, that they're going to have some deficits, but she was independent in taking care of herself, resuming the vast majority of her activities. I think she did not resume driving, but otherwise was back fully engaged in her prior social life, her other activities. And this is only 90 days. I mean, people are still even improving beyond that. It's now about a year out, and she continues to improve. Super gratified with her outcome, as is her family, who had to make a difficult decision on the spot, as is often the case in these very acute trials. I would really like other providers to know that there is enormous opportunity to improve outcomes for stroke patients at all levels. And referring them to Penn in the acute setting, in the subacute setting, in the chronic setting, offers them opportunities that they might not get elsewhere. And by having people come to us with an open mind about participation in these projects, we hopefully get to answers sooner, which then applies to everybody and then leads to better outcomes nationally and globally. So research is hard. It's a concept that is challenging for patients, for families, for doctors. We all wish we knew all the answers, but we just don't. And again, encouraging people to think about participation in research really has enormous benefits for all of us.
Well, it certainly does. And thank you so much, Dr. Kasner, for joining us today and telling us about the SELECT-2 thrombectomy study and Penn's role in this study. To refer your patient to Dr. Kasner at Penn Medicine, please call our 24/7 provider-only line at 877-937-PENN. Or you can submit your referral via our secure online referral form by visiting our website at pennmedicine.org/referyourpatient. That concludes this episode from the specialists at Penn Medicine. I'm Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for joining us today.